Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Discover a new way to record with iZotope Spire Studio. With this portable multi-track recorder, you can quickly and easily capture your songs at the highest quality via the built-in mic or dual inputs. Spire Studio automatically detects your instrument to sculpt the tone and set input levels. Wirelessly pair it with your iOS or Android device to add creative amps and effects, edit, mix, collaborate with bandmates, and export your songs. Now available at retailers like Sweetwater, Auto Music, Amazon, as well as Thomann and Andertons in Europe. Between now and the end of the year, get a free standard iZotope plugin with the purchase of Spire Studio. Learn more at iZotope.com/Spire/nerds. Strings Direct are one of the most comprehensive guitar string retailers worldwide, so they definitely know a thing or two about guitar and bass strings. And with that comes the complete understanding of the frustration you get when trying to find a set of strings with the exact gauges you want. Maybe you're looking to tune in Robert Fripp's famous new standard all-fifths tuning, or perhaps you've got a Yamaha G10 synth guitar, which requires 6 16-gauge strings. Who knows? Whatever your tuning, whatever your gauge, whatever your preferred brand, Strings Direct have you covered with their Strings Direct Custom Gauge Builder. Build your own set of signature strings from scratch with options for electric, bass and acoustic, and with banjo and classical guitars coming soon. And choose from a huge range of the world's most popular string manufacturers. Strings Direct have got us guitar nerds covered. Check them out and build your own set at stringsdirect.co.uk. And on top of that, all Guitar Nerds listeners can take advantage of a 10% discount off of anything on the Strings Direct website throughout November and December. Just use the code NERDS10 at the checkout. And for more info, follow the link in the description of this podcast. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. This is our last guitar podcast, our last regular guitar podcast of 2019. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hello.
Mark Packham.
Are you hanging up your stocking on the wall?
And Matthew Knight.
I had to buy a real tree.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, he did. Yes, mate.
Well, yes, it is. Christmas is fast approaching. And whilst we do have the Gear of the Year 5-part series coming out, which will be airing for listeners between the 16th and 20th of December. This is the last regular episode for the year.
Thank goodness.
We're not going to be back until 8th of January, I think.
That's when the episode will go out, yeah.
Yes, that's right. That's when the episode goes.
That's almost
out.
A month away.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be, just because of the way the days have fallen, it's going to be like our longest Christmas break ever. Mm. And boy, is it welcome.
Well, we could do one on New Year's Day.
New Year's Day is an official release. I think it's a good idea. I'm up for that. Would you fancy 9 o'clock on New Year's Day? You're up for that,
Wait,
Joe?
Hold on.
Joe doesn't wake up till the second.
I actually think it's a great idea.
I feel that I've walked into something here.
I'm really looking forward to the live streamed 9 a.m. broadcast.
Let me just walk backwards into this bush.
In fact, actually, how about this? Better idea. Let's do 8 a.m. on New Year's Day, and we can welcome in, for any listeners who are at home in America, in California,
we can welcome in the new year with them.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but Joe will probably still be awake at 8 a.m.
Yeah, that's,
so
oh, that's true.
Yeah,
yeah. Go straight through.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about live episodes, isn't there a live episode this Sunday?
There tomorrow. Is a live episode. Tomorrow. Oh, so this isn't even the last regular episode.
Yes, it is, because...
Oh, yeah, this is the last regular episode.
It's the last regular one.
Also,
yeah.
This episode isn't going to come out until Wednesday, and we're talking about something that's going to happen on Sunday, which is tomorrow, but for people listening to this on Wednesday, it would have been three or four days ago.
But it won't actually come out until the
Friday.
Recorded version. Yeah, yeah. There you go. But it will be a live episode. And
it will be a live episode. Anyway, so we've got lots of things to talk about. We've actually got a load of things to get through this week, because we've got some cool stuff in the mailbag, because people are sending us stuff for us to consider for the Gear of the Year podcast. There's been some interesting news, unlike last week where you had absolutely zilch
to talk
about.
There was honestly nothing.
Well, like, done for getting through that.
Probably the best podcast we've ever done, I think.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good fun.
We
answered the eternal question, have you ever seen a ghost?
A Christmas ghost.
Yeah, have you ever seen a Christmas ghost? So, we should do Have You Ever Seen a Ghost t-shirts, because I think of anything this year that's caught on the Guitar Nerds podcast, it is people constantly wondering, have you ever seen a ghost?
Right, okay.
It could have a little guitar on it, like somewhere like near the bottom or round the back, sort of near the bum area.
Maybe
just tiny little guitar.
Maybe screen printed on the inside of the t-shirt.
Or just white t-shirts with a little white guitar logo like printed, but then in big kind of black letters, have you ever seen a ghost?
What, like Frankie Says Relax?
Yeah.
Comic Sans, though.
If you'd buy that, let us know. You've still got time for Christmas. Well, I'm sure we could get them made and shipped.
Yeah, I'm sure you could. You seem like a Comic Sans sort of a guy.
We should absolutely do it in Comic Sans. I'll be so up for that.
anyway, so I've just got back from the European mainland where I was touring, which is always interesting to go, because you go to some places and they just have guitars that you see less commonly over here in the UK. These sort of weird old bits and bobs. And I saw some super cool things, actually. I was playing a show in Belgium with a Luxembourgish band. Is it Bergish or Bergen?
A band from Luxembourg.
I think it's Bergen. I think it's Bergen.
A band from Luxembourg.
But you can say Bergen. Luxembourgen.
Okay. I don't know.
You definitely can. They describe themselves as that, either Bergish or Bergen. So I think it's Luxembourgen. I'm going to go with that. Anyway, so this band called Mambo, they're actually playing their last ever show, and their guitarist was playing this this Jaguar, but it was aluminium. And so I asked them about it afterwards, and it was this little company from Luxembourg called TT Tides, who make these aluminium guitars. Now, in the for the fellow podcast hosts, I've popped a couple of pictures of the guitar in question here, but there's also, you can, listener, you can visit tttides-guitars.com to check out the things that are on offer there.
So that's three T's and then Ides.
Ides, yeah, that's right.
Hyphen
yeah.
guitars.
Yes, yeah. So, really, really interesting aluminium guitars, because they're blooming affordable.
Are they?
Between 12 and 1400 euros for an aluminium guitar.
That
I think
seems very good.
Well, yes, because these are actually bolt-on, rather than, of course, normally with something with something like an Electric Guitar Company guitar or a Travis Bean, you'd have the entire neck and the back plate of the guitar would be made from a single billet of aluminium, whereas in this case they're bolt on necks, real bolts though, proper like bolt things, not screws. And then, so the guitars essentially consist of a neck, and this is what I really like. They've kind of taken the amount of the modular idea of Fender to the next level, but with aluminium. So you've got the neck, that's one thing, yeah. But here's the thing, the neck's aluminium, but on the back of the neck, and if you see in the pictures, there's a black strip down the back of the neck. Now that's actually a composite wood that attaches to the back of the neck, which defines the profile. So he makes one neck, but you can change that little additional piece on the back, which will change the profile. So you can have your neck thicker or thinner depending on that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, really cool. So you could buy that one guitar and then decide you want a thicker neck, and you've just got to change the little piece of sort of composite wood on the back there, which is pretty cool. And then on the body, the same thing applies. So it's a double humbucker guitar with the humbuckers mounted into kind of a single strip that runs through the middle of the body, and then it has wings. So those wings can be changed. He also does like a 335 style shape, or in this case, the the Jaguar shape, and it's hollow. Now, because those woods, there are I don't know the appropriate word for it. I keep saying composite, but that's not the right word. It's like a they're like a thick ply sort of thing. So okay. It's like a compressed wood. So it's quite heavy on top of the aluminium. So this was a heavy guitar. Like this Jaguar was, even though it was hollowed out, was easily sort of a heavy Les Paul weight.
Yeah.
But like super cool. Lovely, like the aluminium neck with gorgeous sort of like block inlays in there. I love the three T's for TT Tides he has stamped out of the headstock shape.
I was literally about to say that. Yeah. I think that's the coolest
bit.
That
is cool.
And on one of the guitars that I can see on here, he's actually included the bits that have been stamped out of the headstock, and that's got the serial number on it.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
I've just gone their Instagram. That's your certificate of authenticity.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, that
is really good.
Really cool. But what an interesting company, and what a fantastic way to be able to get hold of an aluminium instrument.
Where did you see how much these are? Because I'm on the website, and there's no shop or anything.
So, yeah, so if you're on the website and you go to like the main page, I think there's like a gallery page on there. Okay. I'm not on it. I think, yeah, gallery and infos, and then there are the instruments themselves, the standard models and custom models. If you just hover the mouse over each of the instruments.
Oh, yeah, it does say there, yes. Yeah, then yeah.
Gives you a
1350, 1400. Yeah. It does seem really reasonable.
Really reasonable for what they are. So just sort of one fella fashioning these things out of aluminium was obviously, you know, by making them modular, is managing to keep down the price for how he produces them, because I assume it's obviously he can just make that one neck and then he can define... He essentially has to make a handful of necks, a handful of those central bits, and then he can just make whatever the wings are and whatever the neck profile is that you want to make. So it's an affordable way of doing it, as opposed to sort of having to create something all out of one billet.
Yeah. It's it makes complete sense.
Worth mentioning on the site as well, I don't know if you said this, Joe, but he's also got like just custom necks for regular guitars. So there's like a Jazzmaster, and he's built a neck to fit that.
Oh, really? Yeah. So there's aluminium like custom necks for... Yeah,
exactly. So it just looks like it's... Great. I don't know. This I can't tell exactly what this is, but it looks like a kind of like Mexican Jazzmaster or something. But then it's got one of his custom necks. But interestingly, he's also done one for PVT-60.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a guitar that is really cool and you can pick up for not a lot of money. And he's got a custom neck available
for that. I mean, that looks incredible.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And that's kind of, to be honest, that's the bit, isn't it, about an aluminium guitar that you're interested in, really. It's the neck.
It's the neck.
That's quite a cool little retrofitable thing. I wonder how much the necks are, because I'd love to get something like an aluminium neck for like my bass six or something, and shove that on there. That would be cool.
There's no there's no price attached to this neck, unfortunately. No. But
I assume if they're doing them for, you know, jazz masters, then doing it for a bass six is probably not that difficult.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the weirdest thing is he does do a bass, but it's a 29.5-inch scale.
Yeah, that's correct, isn't it? That's what you want. Oh no, my gosh, it looks really weird.
4 inches too short, but
yeah, it looks so weird. So no, we talk, no, it's perfect.
Very right, I see, yeah.
Perfect scale length.
Perfect scale length, of course, yeah.
So speaking of aluminium guitars and necks, I went to see the band Torch this week.
Oh yeah.
Who are one of my favourite metal bands, maybe my favourite metal band.
Oh, right. I was so gutted I didn't get to see them in London.
Yeah.
They were playing the New Cross Inn.
They were, which seems like a small venue for them. So basically, this is the first time I've seen them in probably 5 or 6 years. I went through a phase of seeing them quite a lot,
right?
And I hadn't seen them for ages, and I kept missing them. But they are so good, and it was so loud. It was like I could not believe. So it was at this venue, the Green Door Store in Brighton, which is 150 capacity.
Yeah.
And I think they must have just been doing a run of like smaller shows, because they played the New Cross Inn, which again I think is only like 200, 250.
Yeah, it seems like a really small
and
show.
I think they're a bigger band than that.
Yeah, easily.
So, but they were so good. They were so loud, and it was a really cool show. So they got on, and basically like the crowd was like really eerily polite. It was so weird. Basically, they got on stage and everyone was like, yeah, woo! And then there clearly was some sort of technical issue. And basically, everyone just stood there for a couple of minutes, just like politely letting them work out what the issue was. And like, it was honestly like dead quiet. People just stood there, just like, okay, yeah, we'll just let them sort themselves out. But all three of them at one point or another used guitars with aluminium necks.
Really?
Yeah, so the two guitarists and the bass player.
Doesn't the guy that now play, one of the guys that plays guitar, was the bass player at some point?
I can't really remember the the sort of
there was actually
lineage.
A premier guitar thing recently, and they were interviewing one of the guitarists, and I think he was the bassist at some point.
Yeah,
now he's the guitar player.
I think that's correct, but I like, to be honest with you, I really don't know. I don't really remember which way around it is.
But yeah, I was gutted. I missed them because yeah, I think the last time I saw them was at. Was in Brighton, actually, was at that place that I don't think is open anymore near the seafront. I can't even
the engine room.
No, not the engine room. What was the other one? Maybe it is still there. The bigger
horn.
One.
Local
the
knowledge. Horn. Coalition.
The horn. The horn. Okay. Is the horn still there?
No.
Oh. Well, I saw him there.
Okay. well, anyway, they're great. And what was really funny about it was just like the amount of noise that was coming off the stage. So the bass player was using 2 4x10s,
right?
Some sort of Ampeg rack SVT into two 4x10s, and then the other two guitarists between them were using. From what I could tell, I was stood at the back, but from what I could tell, there were 3 JCM 800s on stage, and they're just going into those.
That's a lot of amplifiers for that very small, very brick.
Yeah.
The Green Door Store.
But yeah, they were so good. They kind of get described as stoner pop or like doom pop. So if you're into anything like that, you should definitely listen to Torch. They were bloody great. And yeah, aluminium guitars, really interesting.
Very cool.
It's actually. I think in the US, because obviously they obviously hire backline, they actually have their own custom amp.
All right.
It's by a brand called, I think it's his own, I'm just having a look here because I was trying to find, I think it's his own company or something similar, which they run through 8x10s.
Okay.
And it's just, yeah, 2 gain channels, basically. But yeah, there's worth checking out. I think their pedal boards are basically delay, a phaser, and a tuner. And then the aluminium guitars, and then that's it.
What more do you need?
I'm definitely going through a bit of an aluminium phase at the moment. I keep looking for those Kramer XKB. Have you seen those? They're like, you can get them single precision bass pickup or 2 precision bass pickups. And they remind me of the sort of Westone shape, like a... As if you've taken maybe like a Yamaha BB or a P bass and trimmed it a lot.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of them right now.
Yeah, there are some good deals to be had on reverb for some of them at the moment.
Are they all aluminium necks?
They're all aluminium necks. Yeah, exactly. Which is very, very cool. So I definitely something that I've never had that I definitely do want to have at some point.
I tell you what, that T60.
It looks good. T60s
are great.
Good. Just looking at these Kramers. So there's 2 XKB models, actually, Joe, from what I can tell. The XKB20, which definitely does look like, as you were saying, like a kind of Westone or like Yamaha BB. But there's also the XKB10.
Oh, which has a... The XKB10 kind of has a sort of Explorer-esque shape to it.
Explorer-esque. Very much a kind of flying V, but like kind of fatter. And the V is like not...
So
pronounced.
It looks like the Andertons logo.
It does, like the Andertons logo.
So those ones, they're very cool. You know, a lot of those come in 8-string. Most of the ones that we see on the market of that body shape were 8-string.
Of course, I mean
8-string bass.
Yeah, but as in double fours.
Yeah, sort of thing. So I mean, if you're going to have a ridiculous guitar like that, why not make it 8-string?
Absolutely. I think there's...
See, I'm actually the opposite of that. I don't understand why you would go, oh, here's this really niche thing that basically nobody will ever want this shape. How can we make it more niche? Oh, yeah, let's only make it available in 8-string.
The thing about 8-string bass, though, is like...
You're just going to sound like Road Rash.
What is that?
That sort of that, like, like power chordy sort of 80s, like... sort of sound.
It gives it almost like a synthy tone because they're all
octave.
Yeah. Are they all octave or is it just the bottom two?
I don't know what they are. I don't know what the tuning is. I know that whenever I play them, I'm like, this sounds like Road Rash, as in the Mega Drive game.
It's because a lot of that stuff was like octaves. When you think about like, you know, 8-bit sounds and stuff, there's kind of a lot of that octave going on, which is why you can recreate it with like octave fuzz pedals.
Right.
But yeah, 8-string bass, do they? I can't remember whether they have. They're all doubles. I think maybe they are.
It must be. Unless, I mean, it must. What's the alternative? That it's a 5-string bass and three of them are octaved? Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
So standard tuning is usually this: high E, low E, high A, low A, high D, low D, high G, low G. So yes, octaves. Right,
thanks for going through them each individually.
But there are other ways to tune it. So for example, Chris Squire of Yes.
I love that man. He was such a great bass player.
When high E, low E, high A, low A, high A, low D, high D, low G.
Oh, right. Okay, cool.
Wait,
wonderful.
What, say the top four strings again.
High A, low D, high D, low G. So it's tuned in fifths.
Okay.
No.
So it's E, A, and then... So, the, and then, yeah, an- and then another
A.
And then A again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then D. I mean, so there's three A's next to each other.
Yes.
That's
why, why is it... What, so low A, high A, high A?
Yes.
High A, low A, high A?
No, the first way around.
So there's two high A's next to each other?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so, so weird.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, so the notes played on the upper two sound as open fifths.
I've been seriously considering that bass, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure about the eight string thing. I don't know if I get much use of it out of it. I guess you could take off, you could just put the octaves on your D and G string, as it were, and so have some fun stuff for up high, but still have your fundamentals on the...
Yeah,
the
like you get with eight-string guitars sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. Was it that Martin that was an eight-string?
I think Schecter have certainly done one like that, but that might have been for The Cure.
It was Taylor.
It was a Taylor. It was the two middle strings. It was the D and the G.
Yeah, best acoustic
octave
I've ever played.
It was really nice.
And it was a baritone as well, so it's tuned B to B.
Very cool. The eight-string bass guitar Wikipedia page is fantastic, because not only does it tell you all about the, like, weird and wacky stuff about eight strings, so there's stuff about like fretless eight strings, but there's also a subsection, which is 10-string bass guitars. 10-string bass guitars incorporate a high B and a low B string, like that of a regular 5-string bass, but double string. So high B, low B, high, etc., etc. Michael Manring plays a 10-string bass custom made by Zon Guitars. He uses a variety of tunings, but rarely uses octaves, instead preferring thirds, fourths, and fifths.
Yes, so, that's what you want.
So
maybe this is my calling. I haven't.
Who is this?
I need
Michael Manring.
Yeah, yeah, you know, from Dad's Army.
Don't panic. Right, okay, yeah, no, I don't know who this is, and I'm sure that people are upset
Zon,
about it.
Zon basses are very cool. I've often lusted after a Zon bass, but you can't get them for less than about £4,000, and they're only available in the States, so I'd have to import it and import on an instrument that expensive anyway.
Michael Manring did an album in 2007 with Alex Skolnick, and it was called The Skol Patrol. I'm so into it.
Very cool, very cool. Anyway, should we move on and do some mailbag? Because we've got a load of mailbaggy things to talk about.
Sure, why not?
Mailbag.
Well, so first up, we received a handful of things. Oh, what should we do first? Let's do the Empress Zoya.
So I have been in the Empress Zoya group on Facebook for, I reckon, 12 to 14 months, okay?
Right.
And I still don't really know what it is.
Okay.
It looks like a Mega Drive. Not a Mega Drive, like a handheld...
Game Gear.
I was literally about to say Game Gear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like a Master System or something like that. Gear. Was that the handheld one?
No, the Game Gear was the handheld one.
Okay. It looks like... Okay, can we just cut that bit out, yeah?
Yeah.
It looks like a Game Gear...
Yes.
Yeah. Cheers. Come on,
Yeah, it is super cool. So, I mean, Matt, I assume you're quite well versed on this as well, but I'll talk about it first. So, the Zoya, I think, is an absolutely incredible piece of equipment. One of the first things, I thoroughly recommend, if you've not heard of it, you've not checked it out, you need to go and check it out. But I tell you what, you're going to have to watch 3 or 4 videos to work out even what it is in the first place. When I got this pedal, I did the thing that everyone always does. When they get a new pedal. In fact, Mark insists on doing this, even if you do offer to help him, and that's to just plug in the pedal and try and work out what it does without following any instructions. And it is impossible to do that with the Zoya because of the level of complicatedness that it is. The Zoya essentially is it's a modular device. So it is a pedal with a ton of buttons on it, but don't think about it like that. Think of it as being a modular synthesizer, and instead of those buttons, imagine those are all your patch input and outputs.
because that's how this pedal works. But you can do literally anything with it. For example, I was able to assign a bottom run of buttons to be keys, to be notes that I could actually press and then build in effects after it. So phases and delays and things to turn it into a synthesizer that you could play without a guitar. Because it's got loopers and things built in there, you can build in sequences and tracks and have them sort of just queued up, ready to go. Sort of cool, fun 8-bit tracks. But if you want, it can also be your best drive pedal or reverb pedal in its sort of most basic form. I thought like setting up an effect was a really weird, interesting thing, because it takes everything from the most basic level, so it's almost not intelligent in that sense. You have to tell it every specific thing that you want it to do, and I mean from the very basic. So if I set up a new patch, is it when I've got that new patch set up, your guitar isn't going to make any sound when it's on, because it doesn't even know that it should be reading from the input. So you've got to tell it, you've got to assign one of those little buttons and say, this button, I want you to read the input, jack. And then you've got to assign another one and say, I want you to read the output. Now you think it would make noise. It won't, because you haven't connected those two things. So you then have to connect them, which is very simple. You just press the two buttons together. But now you've created a circuit, and now audio will pass through. You can now build effects in between there, reverbs, delays, drives, whatever. But with every effect, you have to build it in. You have to connect it. And whether you connect that to the left or the right or to both, have it in parallel, have it in stereo, however you want. You've got to do all of those things, and then each of those buttons will take up a certain amount of CPU and will be assigned to a certain control. So if you add a ping pong delay, then something on there is going to, one of those buttons will control pre-delay, one of those buttons is going to control the mix level and things like that, so forth. So that was the longest description of a pedal, yeah. But it kind of needs that.
it's basically just a pedal board in a pedal. That's the way I think about it. And what it's nice is it's kind of open source, so people can actually create their own, not only their own patches, but also their own modules.
Yeah. That's one of the best things about it, that there's an online community for this sort of thing. And I was saying this to Jay earlier, like the great thing about the Zoya online community, as opposed to, for example, the Line 6 Helix community, is that, you know, that so many people have a Helix at any skill level, that if you go on to the Helix sort of patch community and try and flick through, then you're sort of finding, you know, My Chemical Romance Chorus 1 patches. There are just so many rubbish patches on there, whereas the Zoya is so complicated to use that, generally speaking, I think anyone who's using that community to upload things, you're going to be looking at some pretty high quality, interesting things.
What if you want My Chemical Romance Chorus 1? I mean, that's the thing, isn't
it? That's true. And absolutely, if you do want to do that, the Zoya is the pedal for that.
yeah. I buy that just for the chorus sounds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It gets pretty insane, because I think, if I remember rightly, there's a bunch of modules, and then you've obviously got a space per page, which is the buttons you see, and then you've got 64 pages. So yeah. I think you can basically like create like masses and masses of like connections, to the point where
it does also guide you on how much of the CPU you're using up per patch. So you do have to be aware of that. Like, you will eventually run out of space if you're running, you know, too many complicated things.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Singular Sound, the music gear company from Miami, Florida, known for the Beat Buddy, the only drum machine that sounds human and is easy to use. It's the first drum machine in the form of a guitar pedal, so you can control the beat with your foot whilst you play. This year, they came out with a new 6-track stereo looper pedal with touch-enabled screen, hands-free mixing, and simultaneous parallel and sequential looping, called the Eros Loop Studio. They also came out with a Cably, a portable cable management system that organizes your cables so they'll never get tangled again. This Black Friday, visit singularsound.com to order new gear. Almost all products will be 10% off, and any order automatically enters you into a chance to win a $200 Singular Sound gift card. On top of that, Guitar Nerds listeners get a $10 discount on everything on the Singular Sound website by using discount code GUITARNERD, or follow links in the description of this podcast.
Yeah, I'm really keen to like try it and give it a go. And I think actually I'm keen to see how it goes over MIDI, because I think really probably what you'll find is that you'll dial in a few things and then you'll kind of just recall some stuff over MIDI. But not a lot of shouting about it online too much. I think it is niche in some ways.
It's so complicated, I think, that it's so not sort of functional out of the box that I think it's only going to attract a certain type of.
There's presets built in though, isn't there? So you can you get an idea of what it can do at straight out of the box,
but not like they're not like functional presets. They're like here's some crazy synthesizer.
Yeah. But I mean,
here's a chorus.
You know, if you want like functional presets, then get Helix. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Of course. Yeah,
something completely different.
But that's kind of what I mean. Is I think it will remain to be niche because it, whilst it has all the capabilities and more of a Helix, it's not spoon feeding you those capabilities. It's up to you to create those,
which I think is something that we all liked about the Helix. And the the other similar sort of products of this generation in comparison to the previous sort of high level multi effects like the TCG system and stuff like that, right, is that the Helix was made things easy to use, and it made it very easy for you to move around and shape your signal path.
Absolutely.
Whereas what this is doing is it's more a case of, okay, what do you want to do? You've got basically limitless parameters. You just have to really dig into it. And I think this is a product for real nerds.
Well, you have to know what you're doing to use this better. You have to understand how... Sorry, Matt, go.
I was going to say, it sums it up in the first line. The Zoya is basically a modular synthesizer in pedal form. Yeah. And if you ever stood in front of a modular synthesizer... you know that one wrong move just basically cancels everything. So you sort of have to understand not just the signal path, but you have to understand like effectively how you chain things
exactly
together. And it's basically breaking. It's like when you see all these fancy chefs, like, I've made a deconstructed cheesecake. And then it's just like the same. It's basically a meal, but everything's in its own individual parts. That's what this is. And I think I watched a bunch of videos and it sort of started to make sense. But like some of the videos were like an hour long.
Well, I watched a load of videos and I found the ones that helped me and the ones that made sense were the ones that synth players were on synthesizer YouTube channels, not on guitar channels.
Is that because in general, synthesizer players know how to attack these things more than guitar players who want it. Because that's the thing is that I don't think you can really look at it like a regular multi-effects pedal because there's so much more in it than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I thought so.
And guitar players like to think they know more than they do.
Exactly. On the synth channels, they tended to break down what they were doing and explain what they were doing and why. And so I could understand the process as well as what buttons to press. On the guitar channels, they just sort of built things really quickly that, to be honest, a lot of them like sounded really naff. They managed to make them sound really sort of 80s. Over process, because it's easy to do that on the Zoya. It's easy to have a sort of a metalized phaser sound over the top of the guitar. And I actually thought like the Zoya comes into its own almost more when you're not running a guitar through it. So a lot of the videos where people were trying to make the guitar the centerfold of the Zoya were the less good ones.
I also think, and this is, you know, maybe going off topic a little bit, but I think that also speaks a little bit about the state of where we are with regards to kind of YouTube demos and stuff at the moment. So I've been seeing a lot, and I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but I've been seeing a lot recently about, take for example, Andy from Reverb.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people who are always sort of taking the piss out of the fact that he goes, oh, here's my clean tone to begin with at the start of every video, because people want to hear, all people, from what I get, all people want to hear is guitar being played in demos. They don't want to hear clean tone. They don't want to hear you talking about the pedal. They just want to hear demos of the pedals. Now, what I want is people to talk to me about what they're doing, why they're doing it, like you say the synth players are doing there.
Yeah.
And what each of the parameters are doing. Whereas it seems like YouTube commenters want No, I want you to play the...
They just want the sound.
I just want the sounds.
Yeah.
I just need that hit of the sound. As opposed to hearing it contextually, which is what I think is useful. Yeah. So you saying that that's what the synth players are doing, I think is probably because they're not being influenced by guitar players in the comments saying, less talking, more playing,
yeah,
you know.
The number one comment on every single demo video.
Exactly,
ever.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, maybe that's not the case in the synth world.
Yeah, I guess maybe not. But anyway, a super cool product, the Empress Sawyer. Something I think, at the moment, I'm super excited for and I'm going to be fighting for on Gear of the Year this year. I think it's a super cool product. Other things that we've received this week, a couple of things from JHS. So we got the cheese balls and we got the clover,
yeah,
as well. Let's start off with the clover. Let's talk about that because, Matt, of course, the clover is based on that old Boss preamp, the FET thing. What was it called?
The FA1,
that was it. Which, of course, is a really weird pedal for Boss. Explain to us and the listener what the FA1
was. I mean, it wasn't ever really a pedal.
No, it had no on-off switch.
No, it was. It had a belt clip and was basically a small...
yeah. Well, you had the orange squeeze around this time as well. Do you remember that compressor you just plugged in the input? This is a similar sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, this, bizarrely enough, actually, this was only really made for a year. I think it came out in about 1983, 1984.
It's 83.
And was basically a... kind of like a headphone amp, almost, in the fact that you just had like an in-out treble bass and then a volume. And it kind of really went unnoticed for a long time. And the only reason that it's so sort of revered now and people want it is because the Edge still uses one as part of his main rig. And it's basically like a preamp driver for your guitar.
Yeah.
So it's, and yeah, I mean, you don't really see them very often. When you do, that, you know, they're a few hundred pounds. Obviously, you could put them on a pedal board and you could put it in a switcher or something if you really wanted. But yeah, effectively, just like an FET amplifier, like preamp for your guitar.
Yeah, exactly. And the clover is a replication of that down to the colour, you know, that sort of weird soft lime green. But it's essentially a make gooder. So they've made a few changes on the JHS one. They've added a mid control, so you've now got three bands of EQ, but they've also added a little toggle switch, so you can choose to remove that mid control from the circuit to have it the same as the old Boss one.
But you were saying that doesn't...
It doesn't get rid of the mids.
It just says it goes mids.
But I guess it doesn't scoop it. Yeah.
So it goes back to kind of a preset mid.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just point
takes out of the chain. So wherever that, you know, wherever that position would be, or you can have all three, or you can have none of them and just use it as a clean boost essentially, because it just has a volume control. Other than that, but also has a DI out on there as well if you're using a bass or you know, something else, any other form of strung instrument. I thought it was a fantastic preamp.
Sounds really good. Great.
I thought, yeah.
Again, just, you know, as a make gooder, it's something you could put in there, leave it on, then forget about it. Sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, I really, really liked it. I thought it cleaned everything up really nicely.
Tons of depth. Really jazz chorusy is kind of what I thought of it.
Yeah, that's what you said when I was playing it, and I completely agree. I think it's a really good way of putting it. It really, you just get so much presence and... I just thought it sounded really, really nice.
Yeah.
Really nice. It's exactly the sort of pedal that I'm into. Like, just make gooder, always on. Like, just don't touch it.
Yeah, it was it's a solid state sound. That's kind of what it reminds me of.
Clean.
Yeah, that sort of, that clean
high fidelity.
But with depth. Yes, yeah. That sort of high fidelity sound. Even, because we were running it through your Princeton with a Mustang, and I thought immediately it made everything sound more... 80s clean.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a Mustang into a Princeton is quite an abrasive. It can be quite an abrasive sound, and it did sort of like, in like a very good way, but like it did sort of mellow it out, and it was really, really nice. I really liked it.
Yeah, I think a cracking product. Oh, that's that then.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
you summed up nicely and then looked around and went, oh, no one's got it.
I thought you were going to follow up with it.
We all said it's really nice.
And it's green as well.
And
so,
it's green.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, it's green.
There we go. Yeah.
No, actually, something that I don't know if you did mention, because I sort of tuned out, was, as I tend to do, it's got a DI.
Yes, I did mention that. Yeah, okay. DI out if you're running.
Would you mind just saying that again?
It's got a DI out.
It's got a DI out, so you could use it as a bass preamp. Did you say that as well?
I think I did, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Fantastic. I haven't tried it with a bass.
You could use it with acoustic because originally...
Matt, do not lower this podcast talking about acoustic guitars. Who do you think we are?
We talked about an acoustic earlier. But yeah, you can use it with acoustic.
Yeah.
So the other pedal...
So just before you jump into that, the reason that I sort of tuned out a little bit there is because the next pedal you're about to talk about is the JHS Cheese Balls.
Yes. Which we did speak about when it came out.
We did. But now we've had it here and we've all been able to try it, I think we can talk about
it. So I kind of like drifted off because I was reading this Sound on Sound article from August 2004 when the Love Tone Cheese Sauce and Meatball pedals were first reissued,
because of course the JHS's version of the Love Tone.
Well, haven't they said that it's like a like for like?
But they've added this, so it would be like for like in that it has tone, volume and gain, but they've added this four toggle switch that changes between pre EQs.
I think that was on there as well.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
is that
it's a like for like.
It is actually like
Right.
So it's like for like. Oh, okay. Right. But yeah, so this actually was met with more contention, I think, than the Clover. The Clover, certainly, every one of us here tried it. Obviously, Matt didn't get to try it, and we all immediately loved the Clover. But I think any make gooderer, as long as it does actually make things good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's pretty easy to really win, isn't it? The job is make it sound better, and it did sound better.
This is a distortion fuzz, which already puts us on the back foot with Jay and Mark, because neither of you are especially into that as a concept.
I mean, Jay, I think generally you just don't like fuzz. There's been some fuzzes that I'm into, but I just... For me, like that didn't it doesn't do the fuzz sounds that I like.
Right. So the preset EQs on there take us through a few. So in the it has basically off 1, 2, and 3. In the off position, it's very sort of it's a very open, kind of quite mid focused distortion. Then in position 1, it cuts out a lot of those mids, and they describe it as offering you a kind of Big Muff esque fuzz sound. Yep. I thought it was more modern than that, but you corrected me on that, Mark, because you said that
it definitely sounds like
You didn't think the low end was tight enough, because I was saying that sounds more metal zoney in one.
Definitely
you
not.
Were saying that the low was way too. It's just that lack of mids, I think, makes me automatically think of those.
But that's kind of like Big Muff, you know. I mean, Matt, you'll probably give us some more info on that, but I think Big Muff is not generally known for kind of having pronounced mids. It's that kind of like bottom endy.
I never use Big Muff, so I'm never quite sure. And then in the second position, you get this really lovely sort of punk distortion. This really sort of.
I thought that was really good.
Yeah,
Parameter 2, I thought sounded really, really good. And you know, this talk of me not liking fuzz is true. But
it was more a distortion in that setting.
At that point, it's more of a distortion. And what I'm not really into is when it is, you know.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
That's a crap out.
Right, so that is what you're talking about is option 3 now,
yes,
which is very much a like a ZVEX fuzz factory, which I'm very into. Like, you get that 8-bit thing where it sort of gates the note and breaks the note.
It's changing the bias, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I love that sound. I think that's really cool, and I think you can do some interesting sort of Queens of the Stone Age style things with it. But I think for the way both of you play, Mark and Jay, that it's really doesn't suit anything.
Yeah,
you do,
yeah,
so it just wasn't for you.
That kind of dying battery sound is kind of not for me, really. I really like Sound 2, like I was saying. Yeah. Sound 2 is more aligned with kind of what I would want out of a fuzz pedal. And certainly, in that setting, I really enjoyed playing it.
Yeah.
But it does a load of stuff that... that sounds good, but it's just not to my taste.
Definitely. I thought this was a fantastic sounding pedal. I'm not sure I 100% get the hype around this. I thought it sounded perfectly good, but I can think of better examples for each of the things that it does.
But it's having it all in one nice box,
of course,
isn't it?
Of course, and that's kind of the thing.
Yeah, I guess the key thing about it is, people have wanted that pedal for ages.
Exactly.
And now there's one that's available in, a nice pedal board friendly box that takes 9 volt and, it's just has all the great things about JHS pedals.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. It's definitely very cool. And certainly, I think both of those pedals will be in our Gear of the Year. I think the Clover stands a good chance of going quite
close. Yeah, the Clover is solid.
One of my favourite Make Gooderers of the year. Now, we do have a load of news to do, but before we leave the mailbag, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the iZotope Spire Studio that a couple of weeks ago we had our first sort of fledgling go on, and I talked through sort of roughly what I'd been doing with it. But since then, I've had a chance to actually spend some time with it. And I sent you guys over a sound sample of it yesterday, of just of the things I was doing with the Spire Studio, which I thought were incredible, because everything I built a track not plugging anything into it, just using the internal presets and the internal mic on it. And man, I was playing it back sort of through my home stereo, and I was like, oh, this does not sound like a demo, not by any stretch.
Really good.
Really good, really good. Considering it's essentially room mic with built-in effects. And I forgot to mention, it's last week, I didn't mention, but you charge it as well, so you can plug it in, but it runs for 4 hours on battery.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, exactly, which just makes it, the perfect hotel room thing. But literally yesterday, it was in the evening, and I was like, right, I want to talk about this Spire Studio again. Let's crack it out, open the phone app. I'll grab this... the Martin D28 that I had sort of kicking around, and I was like,
just kicking around,
just kicking around.
Yeah, isn't that like a 6 grand acoustic?
No, that's 45. 6 grand. This is like 2.5, of
course,
or 3 or whatever. But so I was like, right, I'm just gonna. I played like a little simple chord progression into the Spire. Well, first of all, I set a tempo on there so that I could make sure I could keep everything in time. And then I played a little chord progression in for 30 seconds. I ran a second chord progression over the... Played that back with a second chord progression, just adding in a couple of lead lines. But with that second line, I was able to add... a little ping pong delay and some reverb to make those lead notes come out of the mix a little bit more. And then, of course, I can hit across on the app into the mix function and just bring up that lead slightly.
Yeah.
Which is really useful. I then added, I used the back of the guitar, added like some real, some massive reverb and some slapback delay. And I just did a little drum beat in on the back of the... on the back of the acoustic sort of thing.
Okay. Well, we won't tell the whoever buys that guitar that you've been hammering away at the back of it.
Yeah, true. But then I can get rid of the tap tempo on there, so I can just hear the song. Added some vocals, added some backing vocals. And again, I'm doing this with just the thing sat in front of me in the room, and then I'm adding sort of the vocal enhancer to it afterwards to compress my vocal and to add a little bit of reverb and delay. Pop downstairs, just pick the Spire up in my hands, pop downstairs to the piano, and just played in. I literally put the Spire down next to the piano, played in the root notes over the top of the progression, so it now had this lovely sort of undercurrent. Added one more little lead noodle over the top. It must have taken me 15 minutes, and then I'm like, right, I want to send this to the guys. So I went to sort of send it, and it's like, oh, are you exporting the track as a whole? Let's master it for you here, so you can just like, it does a whole enhancement thing where it just makes sure it gets rid of any of the, because iZotope software is obviously so fantastic. You've got all the RX stuff and all the Neutron.
Sure.
I can never remember the name of the stuff. But you've got all those ozone. That's the one.
Yeah.
And it can get rid of all the sort of the de-essing and the those
that sort of bottom layer of noise that you get, gets rid of all of that and gives you a perfectly good song that I'm then sort of playing out on my hi-fi like 30 seconds later and it was sent to you guys.
When you sent it to us, it was way more together than I expected it to be.
For something where I hadn't plugged anything in.
Yeah, that is the thing, is that you hadn't plugged anything in. So it's, you're doing kind of like vocal harmonies and stuff on there, and it sounds like you're singing into a condenser mic. You know, it sounds very good.
Totally sold, and I haven't even heard it. And I'm like, right. This, because for me, obviously, I've got an interface, and I'm completely like reset my whole Mac because it's about like 8 years old and it's running super slow. I'm like, I just don't even have a door on it anymore. And I've got an interface. And I'm like, I just every time I want to record the last few things because I've wanted to like jot down more ideas. I've just been using the little Shure plug-in mic into the phone,
right?
But it's just kind of a way to quickly capture ideas. And I was like, do I buy a handheld recorder? And I'm like, again, it feels like clunky, but this feels like way more together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm like, actually, if I do more ambient stuff, just taking it around and like capturing like sounds out and about, because I see they do like a really cool little travel bag for it,
yeah,
and a bunch of like cool accessories. And I'm like, actually, just like jamming at home and actually trying to create some tracks, I feel that I might be able to use this and actually record something, which is something I want to do way more of.
Well, the fact that you can export all the tracks independently as well, even after you've built this complete track, you can export things independently. If you ever wanted to shove anything onto a door, but also if you have bandmates that also have Aspire, then you can. Send the complete project to each other.
That's impressive. Yeah. I can imagine, you know, if you're like in a band and you're thinking, right, we're in pre-production for this album, we want to write tunes, but, you know, one of us lives in London, one of us lives in like Berlin and, you know, all around the world or whatever, just buy four of these or five of these, however many there are, so that you can then send the tracks to each other, like collaborate on it and like build new bits in and take stuff away and do that. That seems like a very good use case for one of these. If you're in a kind of a band that where you don't actually live that near each other and you want to all write songs together in a way that is easy and you can do it all through your phones,
exactly.
Like not having to ever get the laptop out, I think that is the key.
Well, it's things like you want to write down a song, you want to, maybe you're not the singer but you've got an idea for the vocal path, you can lay down like a rough guide melody, send it to your singer and they can go over that guide melody like on the same track, on the same Spire.
It's neat.
I'm guessing it saves into the Spire itself, right?
It goes onto the app. Yeah.
So you're only limited by
the amount of space that you've got on your device.
Well, there's also the Spire has its own proprietary storage service as well. So
cloud storage.
Yeah, you can link it to your SoundCloud and things like that. So there's
SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Can you use it as an interface at the same time? Then can you? You can't USB into a computer.
You couldn't use it with a door. No, it's its own thing. Essentially, the app is its own like basic version of a door, essentially, but you know, something that you can use completely wirelessly.
Wiley might use it.
Wiley Coyote
could use it. But it's also very smart, so it's not something where you're ever going to be messing around trying to.
And also, if you can export the stems, then you could put them into a door afterwards. You know, if you've completed the track, then you could say, okay, yeah, but we want to actually put it into Logic or whatever. Just export it and then bring it in.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I want to do more stuff at home and then take it to my mate who's got a studio and then just give him the bits that I've done that he can then actually then record bits and then like mix it properly.
Yeah.
I think it's a great product. And then I was just having a look. Can't believe the price. They're like 250 $59 at the moment.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. There's an offer still going. I think that offer is still going when this podcast comes out. I don't know when it's sort of off the back end of Black Friday. There's a reduction on it on their website, but I don't know if that's gonna still be going by the time this goes out. But nonetheless, still like a very affordable for kind of what it is. A fantastic piece of kit. Should we talk about some news?
Let's do it.
So, Boss have actually released some new things, so it's about time we stopped talking about, sort of guitars and things and turn this over to our
headphone nerds.
Yeah.
Well, where do you want to start? Do you want to start? Which one do you want to start with? Two products that totals 10 this year, 12 this year.
Wow.
Which is why...
That's 12 new products. That's a lot of free advertising your company's got through us,
Do the synth first, Matty, because I think that is less applicable just because, it's a GK setup.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So the SY-1000, which is basically the mega synth powerhouse for guitar players or bass players, that has the whole... SY technology built into it, which is all the synth stuff without the need for a GK pickup. And it's actually 6 times the power of the SY-300. So you can plug a guitar straight in and get a whole bunch of dynamic synth sounds and build a bunch of synth patches without the need for a GK. But when you add in the GK pickup, it opens up a whole range of other options. So... firstly, this isn't the GR55, I'm going to make my guitar sound like a trumpet and a piano, and then I'm going to add in a drum beat. This is pure synthesis. Right.
Well, that's a shame.
Well, the thing is, we're not discontinuing the GR55, but it's a totally... this is like... I guess keyboard players call it like a workstation. So you've got a huge keyboard that does a bit of everything, and you can, basically build... an entire orchestra out of one keyboard.
Right.
This is the same thing for guitar. So by plugging the GK cable in and using the GK pickup, you've got what we call instruments. So instruments can be built out of guitars, basses, acoustics, synthesizers, oscillator synths, GR300, which is an old synth we made in the 80s, and Vio guitar.
A violin.
No, the Vio guitar is basically allows you to change the harmonic content and the amplitude structure of your instrument.
I don't know what you just said.
Well, so a synthesizer has ADSR, right, which is attack, sustain, decay, and release. But you're always tied to a guitar's sustain being like how the instrument's built, right? You can't have an infinite sustaining guitar unless you use a Sustainiac pickup. So this actually allows you to dial all that in, but it also allows you to change things like the string attack. So you can actually get things like bowed instrument type sounds.
Right.
And then you can change...
so it's a slow gear.
Yeah, a far, far more advanced slow gear. But so you can have one instrument that does that. You can then guitar model. So you can turn your Strat into a Les Paul or your Tele into... a Strat or whatever. So you can do things like you can take a guitar, plug it in, tune it to a Tele model, tune it to open G, turn off the low E string, and then it's got effects and amps built into it derived from the GT-1000. So you can actually turn your guitar into Keith Richards' Tele, but underneath that, you can actually have a synthesizer with 2 16-step sequences underneath. And the sequencer, every step of the sequencer can have its own pitch, its own amplitude, and its own filter. And it's just like this unbelievably crazy workstation.
Do you ever think we've gone too far?
I mean, this
has science gone too far?
It's literally the most advanced synth processing thing. It does absolutely everything, and it's basically like 40 years worth of our technology in
Skynet.
One
it's Skynet
thing. Yeah, but it even does things like USB MIDI, so you can play your guitar in and then obviously play it into a door and track over MIDI and stuff like that as well.
You could also, I guess, trigger other synths as well, so
yeah,
not only
yeah,
could you trigger the sounds that are in there with your ridiculous technology, but you could also go out to, let's say, something like a, I don't know, Emu Proteus 2000, a classic UK garage box.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's nuts, basically. It does...
Wait, how much is the SY-1000?
It is not cheap, my friend. but considering that what it has in it, some people have said, actually, that seems fairly reasonable, but it will retail at €999.
Okay.
But effectively, it replaces everything on your pedal board because it's got all the effects in it. It's got the amp models in it. It's got the guitar models in it. Got all the synths in it. So it's like a multi-effects, but it takes synthesis completely.
Does this not put the GT1000 out of business then?
Well, the thing is, I guess in some ways it does and it doesn't, because the GT1000 doesn't do any of the synth presence. You don't want any of the synth presence. GT1000 is actually slightly cheaper.
Right.
GT1000 is just for guitar. It's just it's a multi-effects thing.
It's a multi-effects, where this is like, it's more of an instrument.
Right.
Because you can layer three, we worked out the other day that because you can layer three different instruments, in theory, you can have a GK triggering three different synths, and then each one of those synths can have two 16-step sequences. So you can have six 16-step sequences all running at the same time. and because it's got four outputs that can be fully assigned, you could, in theory, run a different output to four different amps, and each amp could then have its own step sequencer. The one thing that sold it to me was the fact that you can finally have a proper like synth pad sound, which is one thing that you always struggle with any guitar synth.
Yeah.
Because if you want to sound like an old Juno or a Jupiter or like a really old synth, again, you're always stuck with the attack of a guitar string because it's so instant.
Yeah.
You know, with a violin, for example, you can control the attack and the amplitude of an instrument. So with this and using a GK, you can physically control that instrument attack. And that makes a huge difference to creating a whole bunch of other sounds. So it's pretty nuts, and it's definitely not for the faint-hearted. If you thought the Zoya was complex, I've read the manual. Well, I've browsed the manual, on the SY-1000. There's over 1,000...
Light bedtime reading.
There's over 1,000 parameters. Right. In this thing.
That's too much parameters.
It's got a tuner in though, so
yeah,
you know, that's all right.
Also, essentially what you're saying is this is going to make the TU3 completely obsolete.
I mean, I would love someone to buy one just for the tuner.
It's really accurate.
Have you got anything that does tuner?
So last year in Gear of the Year, when it came to doing amplifiers, I was super reluctant for us to include a particular lifestyle product because I thought it was a step too far for guitar towards sort of lounge wear lifestyle, which was the Katana Air. Now, Boss have also gone one step further with the sort of Katana for home, Matthew.
Yes, so the next product is the Waza Air, which Mark did get to try very briefly. Basically, the Waza Air is a... We've called it a personal wireless amplification system. So effectively, an entire amplifier built into a pair of over-ear headphones, which, to be fair, people have done similar things before, like the Vox Amphones, you know, and it's sort of varying results. But the ultimate thing that we tried to do with this, because you can plug a pair of headphones, you could have a Katana and plug a pair of headphones in, or you could have... you know, an app, you could use GarageBand and plug a pair of headphones in. But ultimately, what you're doing is modeling two speaker cabs directly onto your ears. You're not really replicating the feel of an amp in a room. So using some sort of 3D algorithms, binaural technology, and some gyroscopes built into the headphones, we place the amp in a virtual space that then you can physically control with your head movement. So it takes the amp away from being...
With your head movement.
Yeah, so as in the amp is positioned...
You've not watched the video, Jay.
No, I haven't watched the video.
Oh, Jay, you're not turning up and down the volume by head moves or something like that.
hang on a sec, Jay. Matt, do the spiel and then I'll give my review because I've actually tried them and I've got some thoughts on them.
So effectively you've got you can turn all that off, and you've got a bunch of amps and effects derived from the Katana series, and it just sounds like, you know, a really good amp sound in your head. But when you turn the other modes on, what you do is you place the amp away from the earphones and into a virtual space, basically. So like
fixed location.
Wait.
Yeah, so
let Matt do the spiel.
Sorry.
I'll give the
review. So like the amp is in front of you, because ultimately when you're playing at home, if you're practicing, the amp is in front of you, right? It's not directly on your ears, which is what happens when you put headphones on. It's like if you're listening to someone talk, they're not talking directly into your ear. They're talking away from you.
Yeah.
So what this does, so we give you a couple different modes. So there's a surround mode where you can physically place the amp in front or behind you or any point in the left or right ear. We then give you a similar mode, but you can hear it differently depending on how you move your head. Like if you were at home, you could stand up, play the amp in front of you, then turn around and the sound would come behind you and it would sound different. But the real killer sound for me, and when I tried it for the first time, I was like, you just absolutely get lost, is the stage mode. Because what it does is you can Bluetooth audio to it, and it places, say for example, if you're playing you're along to a backing track, you're normally playing along with the track or on top of the mix. You're never in the band. So what this does is it places the band in a virtual space, and basically you can control the size of that room, puts the amp behind you. So when you're playing, you sit in the mix and it feels like you're actually playing with the band. So you can actually turn round and the band and the amp move to the front of your hearing space. And you can turn around, it feels like everything's behind you. So it actually puts you like in the mix, basically. And it's the hands down the best sound I've almost, even in a room, it's the best sound I've ever had. It's bananas.
So Matt, I'll give you, if you wouldn't mind, I'll just do a little kind of my review as having hands on with them. And, you know, obviously I know a fair bit about guitar amps and stuff. And also I've got a bit of experience with headphones and stuff like that. So first thing, the headphones are, I would say, very well built for the price. Because, Matt, it's worth mentioning, it's not a cheap thing, is it? No, they're fairly pricey. What's the actual retail price?
In the UK at the moment, they're £378.
Okay,
so
fine.
That's RRP.
So I would say that they feel in line with just standard headphones that cost about that much money. You know, they're similar. They share some kind of similar design elements to something like Oppo headphones or something like that they go up to about that money and beyond. So firstly, that's something that's worth mentioning, because obviously one thing that people have brought up is the price. You know, it's a set of headphones, and again, knowing a bit about headphones, people moan when headphones cost more than £100. Bear in mind, there's headphones in the world that cost £5,000.
Yeah.
You know, £300 is actually not a lot to spend on a pair of full-size headphones. So there's that out of the way. Obviously, that's a separate issue separate thing to what they're actually doing. So Matt brought them around, put them on. Firstly, the Bluetooth thing works really well. You know, they've got a little dongle that goes into the headphones that pairs them, and then you plug that into your guitar and then you're instantly paired to the headphones.
Is that like the Katana Air?
Exactly.
It's exactly the same
unit.
Technology.
Okay. Yeah. So that's good, because obviously, you know, Bluetooth always can be a bit of a kind of minefield, and it worked straight away, which is a good start. It also obviously then pairs to the app, so you can make changes to the sound, and you can get involved in doing the 3D space stuff. So Matt basically did exactly the same demo for me that he did for the guys at Anderson's, and also that he's described there, where you put the headphones on, play guitar, and it's just in its standard mode. The 3D modeling or the 3D room modeling is off, and it sounds kind of like when I plug a set of headphones into the back of my Katana,
yeah,
which sounds fine. It sounds like every time that you put headphones on and listen to an amplifier, whether it be, you know, something that's amp modeled like a Helix, or whether you've just plugged into the headphone output on a practice amp, it only will ever sound as good as like a set of headphones on your head. You know, Helix, obviously the amp models are amazing, and you know, it is a great sounding unit. But as soon as you plug headphones in, it's still just you're listening to the Helix out into a set of headphones. then, so I was kind of like, yeah, this sounds fine. Yeah, whatever. And then Matt put it into the first mode is the surround mode, right, Matt?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that basically places the amp, as Matt said, in this virtual space. And instantly, you're like, okay, this is a different world. It sounds okay. So good. Practicing with headphones for me is kind of crucial because, you know, as I've mentioned before, the reason I bought a Katana is I've got a small flat. I can't turn an amp up loud. The Katana in the room is fine, but even then, there's still times where I'm like, actually, headphones would be preferable just because, you know, someone's asleep in the house or it's early in the morning or whatever. And the headphones sound fine, you know, as good as headphones out of an amp do. This is like absolute game changer for practicing silently. It sounds like you're listening to the amp in your living room or whichever space you define because you can adjust how much of the space that you hear.
Right.
So the surround mode is fantastic. And like I said, that's kind of, for me, that's like the basic mode. Actually, the off mode, I personally wouldn't use it because at that point you might as well just plug headphones into a normal Katana. Apart from obviously, you know, the Bluetooth connection, which is awesome. And then remind me what the mode's called, Matt, the stage mode, is it? No.
So we've got surround, which is the one where you manually do it.
Yep.
And then you've got, why can't I remember it? And I've been talking
I'm sure
about
you
it
said
week.
Stage.
That's... Yeah, stage is the one where it puts you with the band as well.
Yeah. So what that does is then the head tracking stuff comes in, or the gyros come in. So basically, you turn your head and it sounds like, if you place the amp directly behind you or directly in front of you, you turn your head and that is... Like, it felt like having an amp in the room because I turn around and the amp moves around where I am. But the key thing about that is playing along to the backing tracks. It is so different to just, again, having the Katana and plugging in my phone via a cable and then...
Yeah, auxiliary in and then headphone
exactly
out.
That.
Yeah,
exactly yeah. That. This is so different to that. It's the ability to kind of blend, putting the band in the 3D space as well, and then being able to blend your guitar perfectly so it sounds like you're in the track is very, very different to just using, you know, either like, I don't know, whatever, using an interface with your laptop or like coming out of a Katana or whatever. I'm kind of blown away by these, and I don't want this to sound like a Boss shill. Obviously, you know, Matt works for Boss and we kind of generally love Boss products, but like I might fight for these for Gear of the Year, even though it's not a product that I've,
oh,
you know,
not again.
Even well,
not again.
I mean, but Joe, honestly, you need to hear them, man. I was completely won over. Yeah, by them.
I tell you what was interesting was I've put them on a lot of people, and a lot of people that actually aren't even guitar players.
Great sentence. Take that out of context.
And I've not shown them someone who hasn't like just the reactions of people. No one's gone. These just don't sound. They just sound amazing.
It's all,
even people that aren't guitar players. And the thing is, we tried it with a modular synth. We tried it with bass. We tried it with piano, and putting them all in that virtual space. And I took them to see Katie Tunstall. She tried it with an acoustic, and she was like, "This is amazing." It's like I better than sound some of the sounds I get in like the studio.
It's it's one of those things where it's going to be limited. In its, well, yes and no, it will be limited its appeal because, you know, it's a, whatever you said, Matt, £350 pair of headphones, which, as you know, as we know, people would say, and it seems some of the feedback is, oh, like, you know, why wouldn't I just spend that on an amp or whatever?
Yeah, why not spend 150 quid less on a Katana?
A Katana, yeah, exactly, and place a Katana in an actual room and play along. Yeah. But I've found that experience using these headphones far more enjoyable than I do with my Katana because I can't turn my Katana up.
Sure.
And
that's what this is for. This is for home use where, you know, you're not able to...
Or traveling. Traveling's the other thing. You know, if you're someone who, you know, takes a guitar with them traveling and is in a hotel room or whatever, you just need these and the USB dongle.
It has a very specific application. And I think, yes, if you're the sort of person that's going, well... You know, why wouldn't I just spend £200 on a Katana and have an actual amplifier? Then it's more that's also fine. But you obviously don't ever have a situation where
you can't. Where you need to play silent.
This product's not for you. I'd fall into that category. I would much rather have a £200 Katana than these headphones. But I'm never in a situation where I need to.
The other thing that is worth mentioning is that with the backing tracks, you are getting that kind of like VR like experience, which it sounds kind of corny and stuff. But actually, I've never heard anything like that in terms of playing along to pre-recorded music with a guitar. It always sounds like I'm playing along with a guitar and there's pre-recorded music happening.
Yeah.
This kind of doesn't sound like that. It sounds like your guitar is on the track.
I mean, it sounds like AR rather than VR.
It, well, sure.
ASMR.
I'm not trying to be clever. Yeah. I'm being serious. Like, it sounds more like AR.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I mean, shorthand, VR shorthand for what I'm talking about. But yeah, super impressed. If I had more money, I would absolutely buy some. But
very cool.
I'm getting a new kitchen.
We'll see what happens in Gear of the Year, I guess. Now, that's it for us here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds. We've been going nearly 15 minutes longer than a normal episode.
I thought we talked a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I just say, in the Patreon episode this week, we're going to talk about the brand new Epiphone headstock.
We are.
How about that?
Joe, you said you'd done a quiz.
Yeah, we are doing a quiz as well. There's a little mini quiz going on in the Patreon. The quiz is designed all around last year's Gear of the Year, and it's designed as a refresher for you boys. For Gear of the Year, so I'm meticulously.
He's making learning fun.
I'll
tell you what. Do you want to talk about the Epiphone headstock in Patreon, or do you want to do it quickly?
No, we're going to talk about it in Patreon because it's only a mini quiz. It will only last 10 minutes, and we'll do the rest of the news there. So we're going to be heading over to the Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad free and early, and it means that you can be a part of and listen into Guitar Nerds live as it happens every other week. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode and a load of other mini-series, and $10 a month makes you an executive producer and gets your name sung in a lovely song, which this week I've recorded using the Spire Studio. So yeah, so you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Guitar Nerds. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds forum, and you can subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Guitar Nerds. That's it for us for this week. We won't be back next week. We'll be back with Gear of the Year for more of this guitar.
Crikey.
Nerdery.
So if this is the last episode of the year, last regular episode, that means this is...
But we have six more episodes this year, but this is the last regular episode.
Right, okay.
Because there's live and five Gear of the Years.
16th.
Yeah, that's when Gear of the Year goes out.
Yeah, Gear of the Year is 16th to the 20th.
Yeah, of course, because otherwise it would be... People aren't going to listen on Christmas Day.
Well, and it's like, also, it would be fine, like, maybe if the last episode was Christmas Day.
Yeah, but it's bang in the middle.
Exactly. It's like the Wednesday. So, I mean,
All right. We're continuing over on Patreon. We're going to go.
Richard Sirworth, Brian Ansler, John Huff, Kevin Vander Linden, Jacob McGee, Christopher Franklin, Mark Isaac, Hodowacki, Rob Bastow, Stephen Buck, Rob Butterworth, Neil Milton, Maren Peters, Stuart Robson, Jeffrey Wack, Christian Van Hansen, Zach Melton, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Eric Fyle, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, and Adam Lewis Crisp, Jacob Moore, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Ramadan, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Hensch, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emma James Baker, Warren Currier, and Sherman Blake Wyland.
This song, the Guitar Nerds. This song, the Guitar Nerds.
Andrew Good, Jamie Kent, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Moncliffe, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Hans Hans, Robin Smith, Eric Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordvik, and Ed Bentley, Steve Merkel, Carlos Mancher, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, and Blair Toms, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clem, Gravett, and Phil Tomsett, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Scott Kane, Sean Arbo, Christopher Waldman, Cuthbert Sand. Those are the Guitar Nerds executive backers.
These are the Guitar Nerds. These are the Guitar Nerds. These are the Guitar Nerds. These are
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.